You're listening to the Bird Dog Babe podcast with my mom, Courtney Bastion.
This episode is presented to you by Purina Pro Plan and Boss Shot Shells.
Every day is an opportunity to train, and every day is an opportunity to keep your standards high. You think, well, if that dog doesn't find me a bird tonight, we're all going to go hungry. So if you have that in your mind, you don't accept shabby hunting. You don't accept a dog that won't point. You don't accept a dog that doesn't stand off its birds, giving you time to shoot the bird. And you also don't accept a dog that runs in and damages the bird, because you don't then have a bird for your table to feed everybody. And I think those key things make you train harder and not accept sloppy performance from your dog.
Congratulations to everyone that qualified for the NAVDA Invitational. Your dog is amongst only 3% of those registered in NAVDA to participate in the Invitational. Pass or fail, you put in a lot of work, have an incredible dog, and will no doubt have an awesome hunting season. It was so good to see the number of volunteers, some that even drove or flew in just to help. Hats off to Annie Nuss, Angie Cohen, Deb Stott, and so many others for all of the work that you put into this incredible, huge event. My only disappointment was that I wasn't able to stay longer nor get a chance to chat with all the people I had hoped to. It'd be fun to have a ladies' night at next year's Invitational. So come on, gals. Let's see if we can get something planned for that. Big thanks to one of my title sponsors, Purina Pro Plan, who is also a sponsor of the NAVDA organization. No other dog food company supports the breeders, the enthusiasts, events, and conservation organizations like Pro Plan does. I had several great conversations with people at the Invitational regarding their pride and gratitude for fueling their dogs with Pro Plan. Right there, dogs that are at the top of their game, they're Pro Plan dogs. Also, thanks to my other title sponsor, Boss Shot Shells. Another conversation starter at the NAVDA Invitational. Karen Foote, a podcast listener, was interested in getting some Boss for this season, and she had some questions about load size, so I tackled that with her. And now that I know Ron Baim of the Hunting Dog Podcast listens to my podcast, I better share that he was also there to help share some insight and suggestions of Boss. He said that I helped him get Boss as a sponsor. I'm not sure how that worked itself out, but it's great to hear that Ron's now shooting Boss and promoting it, since he does have the top-ranked Hunting Dog Podcast. The more people opting for non-tox Boss Shot Shells this season, the better. So go get yours at BossShotShells.com. Siren Shotguns. So while their motto may be shotguns for women, I know several guys that shoot Siren shotguns and love them. Heck, the barrel of my husband's CZ shotgun blew up during training, so he's been shooting the Elos D2. He used it while gunning all day on Monday of the Invitational and didn't miss a single bird. So guys and gals, go check out all that Siren has to offer at SirenUSA.com. Dakota 283. Also a sponsor of the NAVDA organization. It was awesome to see all of the Dakota 283 kennels in the back of the rigs of so many NAVDA members at the Invitational. That group knows what the best kennel on the market is and what to use as they traveled across the country to keep their dogs safe. That's the unparalleled protection that only Dakota 283 offers. Go get yourselves one this hunting season. Go to Dakota283.com and be sure to use promo code BIRDDOGBABE for 10% off. And a big shout out to the biggest supporters of this podcast, the Patreon patrons. They're giving $5 per month to keep the MP3s rolling, and they're getting their money's worth with giveaways and extra discounts and content only available to patrons. So if you love this podcast and want to support it and get in on all of the goods, go to patreon.com/thebirddogbabe to sign up. My guest today is Una Russell. Una joins us from Scotland and is such a good friend of mine, I consider her family. I met Una 10 years ago when I traveled to the UK to pick up a puppy. At the time, she had had a 6-month-old solid liver GWP named Bisto, and boy did he catch my eye. I was able to show Bisto in what is the equivalent to a national, and I won the puppy competition with him. When William and I went back to visit a year later, we met up with Una again and got to see Bisto work. We fell in love with him, his drive, and his incredibly sweet personality. Fast forward to when Una sent Bisto here to us in the U.S. I put on his AKC Show Champion title, and William trained and tested him to the NAVDA Utility Prize 1, and he's become a top producing sire for the German wire-haired pointer in the U.S. We ship semen from Bisto over to Una, where she and her partner, Peter Howard of Tick & Coat GWP, bred Bisto to the UK's only dual champion German wire-haired pointer, Vindy. Have a listen to this episode to hear what Una has all done with her puppy from that mating, the characteristics that make him a special dog, and her future plans. Una describes the differences between hunting, training, and testing in Scotland versus what we do here in the U.S. All right, let's get after it. Well, good morning, Una. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you, Courtney. How are you?
I'm great. I guess it's morning here. It's afternoon tea time for you, right?
It is. It's afternoon and coming to tea time.
Coming to. Do you guys literally have tea like every afternoon for dinner?
Oh, not quite. Not quite. But yes, it's very English to have a cup of tea.
I love it.
Yeah, I enjoy it.
And then soon after tea, then it's wine time, right?
It's wine time for Peter, yes. 9 o'clock any time in our house for Peter.
That's perfect. That's perfect. So you have been one of my closest friends for quite a while now. Gosh.
Yes, a few years now.
Yes, yes. Bisto is turning 13 this year, 13, December. Yeah. So, yeah, it's been a while. And he's been here since how old?
Since he was three.
Two and a half, three, yeah.
We've known each other for over 10 years. We'll keep it at that.
There we go. We'll leave it at a decade. But I completely adore you. You are so very much family to William and I and the kids. And anytime we have the opportunity to visit with you, or you guys coming over here, it's always just the best.
It's definitely, and us to you. We love coming to visit.
Yes. And what I love is, you know, when you guys have been here, you've had the opportunity to come to our NAVDA Invitational to watch Bisto run there. And right. You've been to the German Wirehair Pointer Club of America, the National, a couple times.
Yeah, a couple of times.
Yeah, you helped me with a litter.
Yes, Babes lit the litter, her first one, wasn't it?
It was, the Babe Bisto pups.
Yeah, Bisto puppies. Yeah, that was fun. That was a good couple of weeks.
It was. You got to see how we do our chickens in Wisconsin, how we process them.
Yes, we will not get into the chicken cull, the silky meat. I think I've got nightmares of that.
So. I think I do too. Oh goodness. But I think like just some of the differences between how dogs and trials and hunting in general are different between the US and over there by you are really interesting. And I love the fact that Bisto was able to come over and with all the good training and the foundation you already had on him, where we could transition to kind of the differences that we have here.
Yeah, so and we do have a lot of differences. And I think the biggest one for us between on the hunting side is you guys don't allow your dog to flush the bird, mm-hmm. whereas we teach our dogs to flush and then sit to flush after. And I think that's where probably Bill had a harder job at getting Bista not to flush and actually not sit down on, you know, when he was on point. And when the bird got up, he was, the tendency would be for him to sit down. You know, and we've discussed that before in the past, haven't we?
Yes, yes. Especially when the dog is loaded with so much drive, as one with Bisto is, and when they've been instilled that solid foundation as a young dog of how to control, you know, that those.
Well, those, I guess it's the
reaction,
the
right?
The reaction to want to get the bird, and of course he knows he's got to sit. And I guess I've blocked that instinct of trying to hold the point all the way through and not move, because we obviously want them to get in and get that bird in the air, and it's a big thing over here at this moment in time where if the dogs are sticky on point, they're throwing you out of the competition, really, which it's tough if you've got a dog. It's so concentrating on scent, as I have as my young dog. She's so focused on scent. Scent is her treat. You know, that's the thing that she dwells on, and dwells on scent quite a bit, which I can't stand. Well, you know, you've got to be able to stand 2 meters off your dog here and command them in. And that's very difficult with a dog that loves the scent and got lots of point in them.
Right. Because you want to send her in further until she flushes.
Yeah, she's got to push that bird up in the air. She's got to push. In this country, she must push the bird up off her nose. And, you know, if they've got strong point in them, they're really reluctant to do it. Because they want to stand back off the birds, you know. That's a natural thing. Some dogs have that natural thing and other dogs don't. I think that's, you know, different drive. Whereas Bisto had massive drive. He was happy to, he would bust the bird up quite happily here, and but also had the control to sit down when he was done. It's just a different way that we have here.
Right. And when you guys look into your breeding dogs, that is something that you breed for. And same thing here in the U.S., but on that opposite end where we want that long, we call it a long nose, where the dog is what you guys refer to as sticky on point. We want that. We want them to hold it. And because those are genetics that come through.
Yes, definitely. And is it a good thing or a bad thing? I'm not sure. I like a dog to hold a point. We still want a dog to hold a point, but we also want a dog to be able to break that point and flush the bird on command. Mm-hmm. And that's the tricky training side over here. Whereas it would be much easier if we left the dog on point and flushed the bird ourselves, like you guys do, it would make the whole training of the dog much easier. We're sort of teaching the dog to chase and then refusing it to chase, if you know what I mean. It's a real difficult one, because you're trying to teach them prey drive and then refusing them prey drive, if you know what I mean, by stopping them.
Right. And I like the way that you guys do it there in terms of allowing the dogs to do it, because I mean, you've seen here in our trials and how we run that a lot of times the handlers are out there kicking around in the bushes and can't locate the bird.
Yeah. And all our birds are wild. And I think that's a lot to do with it, that we don't run on planted birds, so nothing's dizzied, nothing's planted, and they are wild, and they will run here. And to be fair, if we did have to flush them, you might be there all day trying to find the bird. You know, because they are wild, and wild birds run, and as we know, and the later that gets towards the end of the season, the more they run, because they've been shot over that many times. They get quite clever to dogs and handlers. So mm-hmm. January trials are pretty difficult if you've got a slow dog.
Because they're just more pressured at that point later on.
Yeah, later on in the year, they've been pressured. And a slow dog, a slow ploddy dog that picks scent and just trots along will never catch up with a January bird in UK. You really need a fast going dog, real hard drive, real hard hunting dog to catch up with a January pheasant, really.
When is your hunting season and when is your field trial season? Do they coincide or can you run on birds outside of hunting season?
No. So on the 12th of August, when grouse hunting season starts, our field trial season starts on grouse. And then partridge opens. And then on the 1st of October, pheasant opens right through to the end of January. So they all coincide. Grouse finishes towards the end of November. So they all running coincide. I haven't got the actual dates in front of me for you for exactly what they are.
Sure.
But all the field trials run only from 12th of August to the end of January, and that's it. The rest of the year we do what over here we call working tests, which are done on dummies, which are a bit like Labrador Spaniel type training tests with dummies.
Hmm.
With a little bit of hunting.
Okay. And when you say grouse, you're referring to the red grouse, correct?
I am, yes. We don't shoot black grouse in this country.
Do you have black grouse there?
We do in Scotland.
Oh, so you can't hunt them or
they're so rare. You'll get points for extra marks when you're running if you do point black grouse, but they're not allowed to be shot because they're rare. And also golden plover, snipe, you get extra points for these if the dog points them.
So the birds are still worked and the dog still has to stay obedient and good bird manners, but they're just not shot.
Yeah. So if a bird, if they're on, let's say one of the dogs points a black grouse, must point, can flush, but must sit to flush, honor the bird away, and then carry on hunting. Mm-hmm. They'll be pipped on to carry on hunting, so nothing short.
Will the gunners still shoot around in the air?
No.
Okay.
No, they won't aim at it at all. The dog will just carry on hunting.
Okay.
Until they find quarry that is on the card to be shot.
Hmm.
So, yeah, it's a bit different. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, they must have manners. So even if a dog say slices a bird or because obviously we run in all the different winds, cheek winds and face winds and back winds. And if a dog slices a bird on a back wind, which is forgivable because obviously they're on a back wind, then they must sit and honour that bird away. They're not allowed to carry on running and just ignore the bird. So that type of manners must be within your dog for UK standards.
Okay. It's interesting that you talk about the winds with that and how much that is noted in your trials over there, because that when I went to that field trial that Rebus ran in, remember at the very end of his run when he had used the winds to pin that pheasant that ran all the way down that
the hedge?
Mm-hmm.
Mm, I remember that.
Yeah.
And he came off his bird, didn't he? And he went back up the hedgerow and pinned him right close in.
Right.
And he got, well, he should have, well, I wasn't the judge on the day, but, you know, actually one of the guns said it was the best bit of work all day at the prize giving. So, yeah, it's a big importance on ground coverage for the wind, how the dog takes the wind on its cheek and runs parallel to the wind, doesn't take too big a chunks of ground, depending on what type of ground they're on. It's all part of judging, and they do get points for it on the performance, really.
Mm-hmm. Let's go into a little bit about the field trials generally. So for all the pointing breeds over there, you have one option of trialing or testing, right? Like, you guys don't have NAVDA, you don't have horseback field trials like we do, and we don't, and like we have the AKC hunt test. So you have one test that the dogs can be entered in, and that's called the HPR, the field trial, which is hunt point retrieve.
Yeah, field trials, and they're Kennel Club, United Kingdom Kennel Club organized field trials by all different breed clubs. So they'll run, most clubs will run novice stakes, which for 12 dogs only, an all age stake for 12 dogs, and obviously then you move on to open. Now, a dog has to qualify from novice to get into open, and that dog has to win a novice, and or a first or a second in all age to get into an open state, because obviously we only run 12 dogs, and there's only about, I think we counted the other day, 25 open stakes within the field trial season.
Through the whole season?
Through the whole season, that's all opens. And there's about, at the moment, 45 dogs that are in open for 12 places in every open trial. And the three trials that I've ran so far in Grouse, there's been one with no boards at all, and two with two firsts and no other dogs to in the awards.
Wow.
So it's pretty tough.
How do you get into a trial? Is it whoever sends your entry in the earliest? Is it a draw? How does that work?
We have, some clubs enter on a electronic system. So you apply online, and it's a draw that's done by the computer. So it's random. Other clubs, they put everybody's name in a hat and they sit down as a committee and they pull the names out of a hat so it's fair, and the draw is made. And obviously the draw, and then they have so many reserves because dogs come into season and, you know, dogs hurt themselves. So you do need reserves for that trial. So you want a full card before you go ahead. You wouldn't want to run a trial with not 12 dogs. So
they're always full.
Oh yeah, always. And there was 28 dogs entered in the last field trial for 12 places.
Wow. So let's look at this. So there's 28 dogs that are running in a trial for, is it a course of 1 day or 2 days?
No, there are 28 dogs entered for 12 places.
Oh, got it. Okay.
So there's only 12 places in every 12, for 12 dogs and handlers, there is only 12 running places. But there's obviously all the rest were reserves.
And 12 dogs will run in 1 day?
1 day, yeah.
In 1 day only. Okay. So how does this look? In the morning, everyone is, those 12 handlers are meeting up early in the morning, roundabout, listening. Yeah. So how does that look?
Yeah. So about 8:30 in the morning, we normally all gather in the meeting place, where usually a car park or a farm ground or wherever. The field trial secretary of that club that's organising the event will bring everybody together at 9:15, and they will introduce themselves, introduce the judges, the guns, sort of explain the day, and at the moment explain obviously all our COVID rules, and then hand over to the judges. The judges will then discuss what they expect of the day and what they expect to see of the dogs, what quarry is going to be killed and shot. They may only want to see pointed birds shot in the morning, first round, and they may want to see ground game shot as well. Just depends on the judge, really.
What would ground game include?
Rabbits and hares.
Okay.
For us, yeah. So especially on the grouse moor, hares. But majority of the judges won't ask for ground game to be shot unless there is a limit of birds. You know, there might not be just as many birds on the ground as what they think, and they will shoot ground game.
Okay.
And then we sometimes drive to where we're going, or we all decant our own vehicles and get into a truck, the wagon, the beaters wagon, and we get taken to the trial ground. And if you're number one, you get taken forward to the judges and you're given your piece of ground and off you go, and the gallery then follow on behind. Everybody follows everybody's dog, so you sort of get to see the dogs running ahead of you. You can't see everything, obviously, because you can't really judge from the back, but you get a rough idea how the dog has gone. You know whether a bird has been shot, and usually the handler will tell you whether they're in or out when they come back from the judges and the field trial secretary.
How much time does each dog have on the ground for their run?
So in the first run, you'll get 10 minutes. So you have a full 10 minutes on your first run. And if it's pointed game on and it gets shot, then, you know, you've got to make the most of that 10 minutes. So exercising your dog before the trial begins is very important. The dog needs to be emptied because you don't want to waste your time or your running time when the dog's toileting. So all these sort of little key points are important. A nice light lead to get away, put it in your pocket so you're not losing any time. And actually knowing your dog well enough that you can let it run, looking at your ground, checking your wind, all that before you start is really important. So you've not wasted your 10 minutes, because 10 minutes isn't very long.
Mm-hmm.
It does feel long when you're running a dog, but it actually isn't that long.
Right.
And then if you're successful enough, at the end of 12 dogs, the field trial secretary will come back to the gallery and will list the numbers that the judges want to see for a second run. So they will be called forward and you will get another 10 minutes running. Now, if your dog then goes on point, flushes a bird, steady to flush, shot and fall, retrieves lovely to hand, birds undamaged, then they'll probably ask to put your lead on and join the gallery, because you've what we call over here, you've completed your card. Mm-hmm. So if it's been a really good run, you would then probably get cut short from 10 minutes and be asked to go back into the gallery. If you haven't, you run the full 10 minutes, and you maybe, if you're lucky enough, at the end of the time they've gone through the whole card, you might get a third run. And a third run is generally only 5 minutes. But depending on how many dogs are running on the third run, they might give you 10, 15, depending on the time of day as well. But as the later we go into the winter season, our clocks and everything move, so it gets darker earlier. So you've really got to get the trial moving and going quickly because you're running out of light.
So let's add in this important factor that these are all wild birds. And yes, in 10 minutes, if a dog doesn't get into a bird at all, are they out or do they get a sick?
Yeah, that's a good point. They're not out. It's classed as a blank run, obviously. But the things that we spoke about earlier, things like, did the dog run with drive? Purpose? Was the dog actually hunting or was it just running? Did it take the wind? Was it really looking to find something? And if it ticks all those boxes, the judges will see that dog again. If in that 10 minutes the dog didn't look like it was looking for a bird, it was just out for what I would call a Sunday stroll, then that dog might not be seen again.
Okay.
But it's the judge's decision, but it's a really tough decision. If there's not many birds being found by every dog, then you've got to be fair and let every dog have a second run.
So name some of the situations where a dog would be told that they're picked up, that they're done for the day. So if they, what kind of manners would do that to them?
Yeah, so if we're, let's say we started running into headwind and the dog just ran through a bird and missed the bird completely, they would ask you to pick up your dog straight away. There is no leeway for a dog in a headwind to miss a bird. It's the easiest wind that we run, and they expect every dog to be able to locate a bird on that. It's classed as a missed opportunity. The dog is then gone. If a dog is not steady to flush, if the dog takes more than a step on flush, two steps maximum, the dog will be gone, especially depending on what trial. Obviously, novice, a young dog would probably be allowed two steps, three steps max. In an open standard, the dog's not allowed a step at all. Must flush and sit or flush and stand. If that happens, the dog's out. You're asked to bring your dog back. If the dog goes for the retrieve without being commanded, that dog's out. And if the dog damages a bird, that dog's out as well.
So what would you classify as damage? How much is allowed of mouthing?
No mouthing allowed at all.
None at all?
None at all. There's no damage allowed. So if a bird's been shot close, as we both know that a bird can be damaged by shot, let's say on one side as it flies across us and we shoot it, and it's shot on the right-hand side, it will be checked whether it is mouth damage or shot damage. And if they think it's shot damage, depending on the load of what has been in the guy that's the gun, then they might say, I would like to see another bird off this dog and keep the dog in. That's the only time they'll see that dog again. Other than that, then anything, any rib damage at all, the dog is gone in UK. Okay. And obviously vocal as well. We're not allowed any squeaks, any whines, any barking. So if a dog's set for a retrieve and it yips on the way to pick up the retrieve, that dog's gone as well. So there's a few little.
And from what I remember too, when, because all the 12 dogs of the day, everybody is lined up and walking this entire time. So yes, you have those dogs that are out watching, all, you know, 11 dogs that are watching one dog out there run, knowing very well that they're, what they're doing. They're getting into birds and hunting.
Yeah.
And I mean, my gosh, I can't even leave my tailgate
with a dog and my gun, and the other one's not just exploding because they know what's going on and they want to be there.
Yes.
So in the dog manners, they have to be quiet in line, don't they?
Yes, they do. They can have a little squeak in the gallery, as long as the gallery is far enough back. Any squeaking in the gallery is okay, because the dogs are excited. They want to hunt, and they all want to hunt. And the higher drive that you've got of a dog, you know yourself, they want to let everybody know that they want to be out there. So that's a bit of your own handling and your own control. So you just got to learn that when you hear gunfire, that your dog's going to be excited. And the more trials you do, the more the dog gets used to, oh, I wait in line, I get a run. I wait in line, I get a run. And it's a bit like conditioning for any type of training. The more you practice that, the more the dog accepts it, mm-hmm. I think.
So is it common when you're training that, and you have friends over with their dogs training, you guys do this?
Yeah.
Same style.
I saw every day I'll run two dogs, and one will always wait on lead, and I will run one dog, and I'll have one dog at lead at heel while the other dog is working. Mm-hmm. And it's just practice, and Peter and I may go out with four dogs. It's not as many as at a trial, but it's still teaching them they've got to wait their turn to hunt and be shot over. And I think that's important, and a lot of people don't do it. The reason why we get an excited dog that's cast off right from the judge's feet, and it makes a squeak on the way out, and the judge will just say, put your dog back on the lead. Hmm. And, you know, that's a sad thing, that you could have driven, you know, 200 miles to trial, paid your 50 quid for your trial entry fee, and within 2 seconds, your dog's made a noise and is back on its lead.
How terrible. Can you take your dog directly back to the vehicle, or do you have to stay out there in the line the rest of the day?
You have to stay out there for the rest of the day. You have the walk of shame for the rest of the day.
Oh my gosh. And pissed off at your dog. So.
Exactly. So there's quite a lot of good characters in open stakes at the moment. So yeah, when you do the walk of shame back, it's quite funny. You get quite a lot of comments and funny things said to you. So yeah, you've got to have a thick skin.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
So you get a second run, possibly a third run. What does the rest of that day look like?
So once you've completed your card as such, let's say I've managed to get a full HPR, hunt point retrieve, the day will end. The judges will notify all those who they think are through to water. So they'll say to you after you run, they'll say, we won't see you again. We'll see you at water. So then we all go to a lake or a river or a pond, depending on what type of water they've got on that ground. A novice stake is a sit wait not on a lead. A gun is fired. A bird is thrown onto the water. The dog must be steady through all that and then sent for the bird and retrieved to hand. An all-age stake and an open stake, you're taken to water and the bird is on the other side of the river or on an island, or it can be a blind on the water, no shot, and the dog is just sent across and over, bird up and back, delivered to hand. And if it's a pond, they can run round as long as they show that they enter water freely, can swim, pick the bird up cleanly and deliver to hand at the end.
Okay.
But they must do all that to get in the awards. Okay. And then it's down to the judges then where everybody is placed, depending on obviously what they've seen on the day.
Right. So there's a possibility that they're after that full day that nobody gets a placement.
Yes.
And is there ever where like first place would be withheld, where these are all dogs that did the task today, but not one of them was superior to be first place? Or
yep.
They're easy, so they do withhold.
Yes, they withhold. So they could be, let's say, four dogs went to water. So they've all completed an HPR. They've all completed the water test. But the judges didn't feel that they were worthy of a first or a second. A first and second in open qualifies you for the HPR championships. And you might find the top dog gets awarded a third place or a fourth place, and the rest will get what we call in UK a certificate of merit. Means they've achieved everything, but they weren't at the standard that the judges felt were high enough for awards.
Okay. So what is required to make up a field champion?
So to make up a field trial champion, you must get two firsts in open stakes with a minimum of two different A panels. So for me and mine, I had three different A panels and a B panel for my two stakes. So you can't be under the same judge can't give you if you have an open stake win with two judges, it can't be the same two judges on the next stake that award you first, because your actual status won't stand. Has to be two different panel judges, basically.
Okay.
But so, to get two firsts is very difficult in UK.
Oh, absolutely. And you have all the pointing breeds running in those trials.
Yes, we have everything, all pointing, Brittany's, Weimaraners, GSPs, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, the whole, I think there's
Spinoni, Bracco.
Yeah, I think there's 18, isn't there? There's 18 different breeds, but not all. I mean, you very rarely see, we don't see many Spinonis.
Mm-hmm.
We see one or two, but not many. We see one or two Braccos. We do see quite a lot of Brittany's, Vizslas, Weimaraners, GSPs, and German Wires are the most popular.
Okay. Which is like the most common breed that you'll see?
GSP, German okay. Shorthair Pony.
Sure. Yeah, same as here in the US then.
Yeah. German Shorthair are really predominantly the biggest class, I would say, that we see of breed. Then probably the wire hair, and then Hungarian Vizslas are very, very popular at the moment. Very, very popular in UK at the moment.
Hmm.
Probably more popular than wire hairs.
Are they really? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very interesting. Yeah, they just have recently been recognized here in the last several years. So they're nowhere near the popularity of the wire hair yet.
No. Out of the first novice grouse trial that we went to this year, there was seven Vizslas out of 12 dogs running.
The wire haired.
So, yeah, the wire and short hair.
Okay.
A mixture of both. Okay. But there were seven Vizslas running. Wow. And the other five dogs were GSPs and wire hair pointers.
Wow.
And a Brittany.
Mm. Do you know offhand how many German wire hair pointers are field trial champions in the history of the breed?
Oh. We've gone about, I don't know what we had. We had that picture done not so long ago, didn't we?
Yeah.
Well, since that picture has been done, there's only been, I think, one other made up since then.
Okay.
Possibly two. I don't actually, I should know. That's really wrong of me not to know.
Well, I'm just trying to think an approximate, like, what would there have been on that? 12 to 15 dogs?
Approximately.
Yeah.
I'm thinking on under 30.
Mm-hmm.
Under 30.
Okay.
Because we only have one ever dual champion in the breed. We've never had any other dual champions. We've got a few full champions, but we haven't had more than one dual champion.
So can you explain that a little bit? So you have field champion, you have show champion, you have a full champion and dual champion, right?
Correct. Yes.
Okay. So you've explained the field trial champion. I mean, I think we all know show champion is going to be similar. Sure.
Yes. For you guys, three tickets, mm-hmm. three challenge certificates in the show ring.
Sure.
To get full champion status, they must do a field trial and get a award.
Okay.
So a C of M, or they can do what the Kennel Club have brought out is a show gun dog certificate. So it's a day where all the show dogs can go, they hunt, they point, they do exactly the same, but they're allowed to be a little less steady than a field trial dog, obviously. So there's little tiny bits of difference, but not too much. They must achieve all the aspects and go to water. And then they get full champion status. And then dual champion is the same, I would imagine, as it is for you guys, where they're a show champion and also a field trial champion.
And there's one in the entire breed history.
Yes.
And that is your partner's, Peter Howard.
Yeah, that's correct. That's Peter's. Yeah, ticking coat. Talk tonight. And Grandma, she's downstairs and she's nearly 12 years old.
The wonderful Vindy.
That is her. Vindaloo, as we call her.
And I have had the great pleasure of spending some time with the amazing Vindy. She is quite the gal.
She is quite a gal. You know, she's no... I don't think she's got any easier with age.
I love it. I love it. Will she be, or has she already hit the grouse moors hunting with you guys this year?
This was her last year on the grouse moor.
Okay.
And she had such a special day with Peter. She ran first. She came on to some grouse. Well, thankfully we've got it all on video. Took Peter in as the gun, produced these grouse beautifully. He got a right and a left over her, and all on video, super retrieves, and has made his day with that dog. For her last time on the grouse moor, we are so proud of her.
Wow.
Really are. Yeah. Yeah.
You very are going to have to send me that video.
I shall.
I would love to see it.
He's you know, Peter was just so stoked when he got a right and a left over her. You know, it's something that you dream of, isn't it, really, over your own dog. Not everybody shoots, and I appreciate that, but to be able to do that over a dog that has achieved so much, and achieved so much for you as well, to give you that honour to be able to do that, especially this year when the grouse were so few up in Scotland. It was a real privilege to be able to do that. It really was.
How amazing. What a great memory and a last hunt for that special girl.
Oh, she hunts every day, don't get me wrong.
But yeah.
Because of the amount of it's hard work on them with the header, and, you know, it's big running. You know, it's not like your normal UK hunting. It's not the small sort of 100 yards here, 100 meters either side, maybe max 200. It's 400 meters either side, and you're expecting the dog to run like that all day. So it's hard going for her. So she did half a day for 3 days when we were up there. And yeah, she did us proud, really.
That's fantastic. So yeah. So let's go a little bit from Vindi then to your big recent success with your Vindi son.
With Vindi, Bisto son, yes.
Vindi and Bisto, yes.
All right. Yeah, Tetley. Known as Tetley Teabag. You know, what a special boy he is. I wasn't meant to be having one of that litter, but there was two solid liver boys that were very nice, and we just, Rebus wasn't very well with his front leg, had a bit of a bad injury, and I thought, well, we'll just run one on. And thankfully we did. He was a bit of a kamikaze puppy, had a real nasty accident, smashed all his pelvis when he was 12 months old, which we didn't think he would recover from. We thought he might have to be put to sleep. But the boy turned it around in 6 months. And 6 months, seven, nearly, yeah, I should say, probably 8 months after his injury, he won his first trial in novice. And also won a fourth place at an open stake in his first season. Just amazing. And it was only then I think I realised that that dog had it and had it all, and that we, you know, I had to put the time and effort into getting everything right with him and as a handler, getting everything right for him. And that's just as important to the dog than it is the dog being super special.
Right.
And I obviously I started to shoot and do all the right things. And then the following season he came out and took 5 awards from and out of the 5 awards he was top dog in three trials, and within and the end of the season, he won a first in open. So that was him with the class in UK. He had his first leg up, which a lot of dogs have and never get the second one. But we left then for Australia. And then COVID hit. We were out the country for 18 months. The dogs were being looked after by our farmhand. We came back in June. He ran his first trial at the German Whitehair Pointer Club Grouse Trial. There were no awards that day. He got a second run, but he missed the bird. Nothing I can do. He just, at the time, we had only 2 months training. He hadn't had much whistling done over him. So I wasn't upset with him. He sat and honoured the bird away. He recalled. The bird was shot. He was steady to shot and fall. So I took all the good points that this dog still had. A lot of great respect in him, and also the training that I had put in some 18 months before was still in the dog. And then we went to grouse for 3 weeks. We've worked hard on the grouse more. We sharpened up all our training, sharpened up everything that I expect, really, on the whistle. And we entered the North of Scotland Open Grouse Trial. It was a bit of a tough day. There was hardly any wind, lots of midges, little biting insects in Scotland.
Okay. I was like, what are midges?
Yes, they're not very nice. They're tiny, horrible little things. There was quite a lot of mist on the ground, so it was a tough day for the guns. The grouse could see you on this day. Their heads were up, and it took clever handling and clever dogs to stand off the birds, and just you had to get your guns forward. But the grouse were getting up. So his first run, he had a lovely run, pointed his birds way off, stood way off his birds. Anyway, guns didn't get there quick enough. Birds lifted, the cubby lifted. He walked out a scent bed. Another bird got up. Bird was shot at, didn't get put on the deck, but still he honoured everything else. You know, he honoured it away, sat to shot, and I was pleased with him. That was his first run, really. Second run was blank, big run, but blank. There was only 5 dogs went to the second run. Everybody else was out. And then on the third run, there was only 2 dogs to a third run. And we ran for 15 minutes, which is really unheard of. But anyway, for some reason, I was saying to Peter, for some reason, he came back to me, he'd been covering the left-hand side, and I called him in, and I just popped him out to the right, round this little knoll, a little hill. He come round this knoll and he started feathering in, and up on point. I could see he was sight pointing a grouse. So I walked forward. I pushed my guns forward way ahead of me. I pushed him in, obviously, when the judges told me to. Didn't realise. Whole covey got up beautifully, sat. Bird got shot over to his left. He was lovely and steady, given the command to, once the judges had said I could send him for the retrieve, sent for the retrieve, nice to hand. Job done, lead on, to be seen at water. And the water was a bit strange of a pond, but yeah, completed the water and was amazed that I was the only dog to water, that it was my day, and I got another second, and that was him made up to field trial champion.
It's incredible.
So I was pretty much over the moon. I think I sailed home all the way. Peter drove, so and then we had a few celebratory drinks when we got home.
We're Sarah and
Tom, and that was nice. We went out for a meal and we had a couple of drinks, so that was all good.
That's fantastic. So yeah. It's tradition at the end of a hunt to have a shot. When Catherine and I were over there, and we went on the hunt with you and Peter.
That's correct. Not on trials.
Slow gin. So you don't get to do that in trials.
Sometimes, depending on who's got a little hip flask, they sometimes might do. But in general now, not on field trials because of the laws of drinking and driving.
Oh, sure.
But when we're normal just hunting, then yes, we do. So if people come to the farm here and we have a training day on Saturday, so we'll probably put slow gin out on Saturday for everybody to have a little drink midway through the day.
I love that. Why slow gin? Do you know what the tradition is behind that?
I don't. It's just a thing that I think it comes from a country background, that it was maybe to honor the bird because it is the color of blood, really. Sure. When it's done right, you know, when it's brewed for a long time, it's very, very dark red, whether it's to honor the bird and toast the bird. And we do it like that we toast the bird and honor the bird that we've obviously shot, because like you, we eat everything we shoot. We don't throw anything away. Mm-hmm. There's always a use for pheasants or partridge, or they go in the pot and they taste lovely.
So going back to the trial situation for a second, because this made me think, when you have a covey come up, how many guns do you have out there?
So we only had 2 guns that day.
Is that typical?
It can be on a grouse trial, 2 guns to a point. Mm-hmm. In a lowland field trial, which obviously on pheasant and partridge, we might have 3 or 4 guns just depending on the society's rules, some societies don't want too many guns. But in general, we have two at a grouse trial, maximum four.
Okay.
The maximum on all trials for HPRs.
So it's typical when a covey gets up that the guns could put down more than one bird.
Yes. Yeah. And you could have two retrieves or three retrieves. Yeah.
Okay. Sure. So that's what you'll do. You'll send the dog for the retrieve. He'll come back. Will you line him up for the next bird?
You're not allowed to touch your dog, but you can bring them in, sit them and line them up where you know where it's landed, as long as you've marked all the birds. But also, if there's a dog in the gallery who's had a point, who's been shot over, but the bird hasn't been shot, they can be brought back out of line on after the first run to get that retrieve. So if there's somebody needing a retrieve, they could be given your second bird. Do you understand? Okay.
So that dog will be expected to be brought forward and
lined up on that blind and sent for a blind retrieve.
Mm-hmm. Will the guns help you with that, or is it your job to have been watching?
Well, the judge will speak to the gun and will get a mark, and then you'll be told where the mark is, and then you send your dog to that mark, and then it's up to the dog to then obviously find it. And it depends on whether you can send your dog out that distance and stop it and then give it a hunt whistle to hunt the ground round about it, or in my German wires, the way German wires hunt, they tend to go slightly downwind of the bird anyway and naturally come onto it. So you don't really have to do much handling with a German wire, I found anyway.
Well, they are the most clever, aren't they?
Well, I'm sure they like to think they are, yeah. They you like to be pulling your hair out with them, yes.
Right. And what are some of the characteristics about Tetley, do you think, that make him so unique and that you saw as a young dog that you thought you would take him through the field trial circuit with? Because, I mean, how many dogs have you field trialed before?
So I field trialed Rebus before Tetley. Mm-hmm. And I then, before that, I had a dog called Cindy who was a Deutsche Drahter, and I ran her in the German system because I had sort of fallen out with UK at the time, only through health issues. I decided to import a German dog. Mm-hmm. And that was really my first attempts at field trials with Rebus. So really not many dogs, although I did have a go with Cindy. But she was too vocal, and really was waste. I was just wasting my money with her. And so then Rebus came along, and I thought, well, he's a fantastic looking dog for the show ring. We're going to make sure that he is a full champion if I can get there. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what pushed me on to do that with him. And obviously, due to injury, he couldn't go on any further. Right. He probably would have made he would have made an open stake dog. Did I think he would make a field trial champion? Probably not, mm-hmm. because he didn't have the, I'm going to say panache, but I would like to say he didn't have that super drive.
Right. The more full-on, like a full-on,
yeah,
right?
He didn't have that full-on flashy. He was flashy when he ran, you know, he was a flashy dog anyway in colour, but he just didn't 100% catch your eye on everything he did. the way he ran, he didn't run smooth. He sort of ran lumpy, as I call it. You know, he was more up and down when he ran rather than smooth across. And like, if you watch Carmen run, she runs flat, mm-hmm. you know, full flat and full power, even across things. You wouldn't think she's jumping things, but she is, and she's running flat with a flat top line. Rebus was tend to be, he was more Spinoni like, where they jump and hop and right. that's a little bit different from what Tetley's like. Tetley runs like Carmen, flat mm-hmm. out with drive. You know, you can see it in their eyes that they're only after one thing. They're not super easy to control. No, they're not super easy to handle or learn to handle a fast dog. And not everybody can handle a fast dog in UK. And that's okay, because we're all different. Mm-hmm. But the ones that are fast and the ones that show that drive are the ones that are ticking all the boxes in a judge's eye, because they're nice to watch. Obviously, you've got to take in what type of breed they are, because they all run differently. Brackwas run differently and Spinonis run differently. But to get that flashiness, to get that top award, it's got to be something, a bit of work that's seen to be outstanding. And to achieve that is really difficult. And it's got to be a special dog that does that, really.
Right. They need to have that pizzazz.
Yeah.
Right. Right. I have.
It's the naughty ones that we love. It's the naughty ones that are the ones that are there, up there. And if
absolutely.
Not,
you and I have always completely agreed on that theory.
Yeah.
I always keep the naughty ones.
Yeah.
They're the best. But no, I have Rebus's sisters here. So, and you know, Stasha is, she's a VC master hunter. Yeah. But she, you know, same thing. She doesn't have that extra grit, you know.
Yeah.
It's a very obedient dog, a very great hunting dog. Reliable. I would say a very reliable dog. Versus the type of, you know, a lot of dogs we've had in the past, and going into the Invitational right now with Rune, you know, a dog very much like Tetley and Bisto and Carmen, where they're very full on, and it's the dogs that you love to hunt behind, because they have that special something, but they also are always on that edge, and you just might not know when they're going to be out of control, and you just don't have that full obedience on them. But once you can get that, it's a great thing.
Yeah, you have a good day, you can have the good dog or you can have the bad dog one day, and you don't know which you're going to get when you let the lead go.
Mm-hmm.
Until they're a bit older, and I do think once they get past, especially boys, I think they sort of reach four and they want to learn more.
Yeah.
Whereas girls at four already know it all, and you're always fighting against them from four onwards to rein them in a little bit. And I think boys just learn that a little bit later, and they're a bit silly and a bit of a clown when they're young, and then all of a sudden it just all slots in. I don't know what it is, but they seem to come right at four. For some reason, at 4 years old, it all seems to, you know, just the brain comes together and they think, okay, I can learn that now. I know what you're asking and what you want me to do.
Yeah, I agree.
And I guess it's like children. Young girls all know everything before.
I agree.
Oh, and you have one just exactly so. And we've all been there, I'm sure. But yeah, I think the specialness is that Rebus was a joy to train because he picked everything up so quickly and was so obedient that made field trialing.
They're the easy dogs to test, aren't they?
Yes. He was a joy. I could go to anything. I knew I could blow my stop whistle and he would sit. I knew I could pip him and he would turn. Whereas I pip Tetley and I've got to count to 10 and look to see if he's turning. I've got to give him that brain thinking time because he's running so hard. You know, and you go, oh, God, thank God he's turned. You know, mm-hmm. he's that sort of dog. You're on the seat of your pants every time you take the lead off him. And you know, that's a bit of the pleasure of it as well. You know, it's the excitement of you've got a dog like that that you know can do it. But he can also make big mistakes. So the dogs that they run hard, they make big mistakes, and you've got to be able to accept that there's nothing you can do about mistakes that fast-running dogs make. You know, they will make mistakes. They will run past game, especially wild game. They might take too big a chunk in a bit of ground that they've covered, and they've missed a bird that's sitting in a little pocket, and the gun walks over it. You cannot, you know, get upset about those mistakes. You've got to learn how your dog body actions are and how he runs and just pick up all his the little bits where you think, oh God, he's right on the edge today. I know I've got to rein him in. I've got to whistle him a little bit more to get him under control and get him back to me. Or in the other circumstance for me on the grouse moor, I had to let him go and not whistle him at all. I had to let him do his own thing. I had to let him cover the ground that he needed to cover to find that game for me and him to win that trial.
Mm-hmm. Will you get docked as a handler if you are handling, whistling, yelling too much?
Yeah, you're not allowed to any vocal commands, really. Everything's on the whistle.
Okay.
It's frowned upon if you shout at your dog. And if you whistle too much, it doesn't really show that you've got a bit of teamwork with your dog. You know, you're panicking that your dog's out of control or your dog's easily going to go astray or whatever. I think you've got to, it's a learning process. I think as a novice handler, you tend to whistle an awful lot.
Nerves
and the test and all the people watching you, because obviously you're on show when you're up front, and you've got to block all that out. And the more you do and the more you progress into it, you're still nervous. Everybody's nervous. Nobody can say they're not nervous when they walk forward to run a dog, because you don't know what you're going to have on your piece of ground. You've got to try and block everything out. Relax, let the dog go, and just work with your scenario that you've got, and really work it. Look at the way the sun's shining on the piece of ground you've got. Will the birds be sitting in the sun? Is it windy? Will they be sitting in a little hollow? And have a real good think of your ground and how you cut your ground up and how the dogs work in the ground for the conditions you have. And there's a lot to learn. That, you know, I'm no expert, and I'm still learning, to be fair. But it's an enjoyable thing to do if you can let yourself do it. Some people just run a dog, don't understand the dog's body language, and don't understand the ground that they're running on. And for me, that's a shame. I think you've got to learn everything about it, and then you become a far better handler than just say you run a dog and a field trial, you know.
I
think you as a hunter understand that, you know. Like for me, I was shooting, you think, well, if that dog doesn't find me a bird tonight, we're all going to go hungry. So if you have that in your mind, you don't accept shabby hunting. You don't accept a dog that won't point. You don't accept a dog that doesn't stand off its birds giving you time to shoot the bird. And you also don't accept a dog that runs in and damages the bird, because you don't then have a bird for your table to feed everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those key things make you train harder and not accept sloppy performance from your dog.
I wanted you to explain a little bit more with the whistling, because here in the US, we typically don't whistle for pointing breeds. It is the more common training used for spaniels. Yes. So in which situations are you whistling for training and testing?
Okay, so most people will set the dog off with just a hand command. And when you think your dog's far enough out, let's say you've been given a beat, the width of your beat might be, let's say, 150 meters to the left and 150 to the right. When you think your dog's reached that limit of your outside gun, normally we will peep our dog, which means that you turn it on the whistle. So the dog then turns and comes back across you and covers the ground, and then out to the faraway gun on your right. We normally then would pip again to turn the dog and bring it back across us. Most people use one pip for turning. Some people use two pips for turning. We use one long blast for a sit. So if a bird flushes, we blow one long blast and the dog sits. And we use a recall whistle. And that's really the only whistles that we use. Some people use a hunt whistle. So like Labradors, I don't know if, like mm-hmm. in a Labrador retrieving test, they'll send the dog out 100 meters, stop the dog on a stop whistle, one pip, and then they'll put on a hunt whistle. You know, it's like a constant little do-do-do-do-do type whistle for the dog to put its nose down and hunt for the retrieve. Some people use that, but not very many.
Okay.
And that's really it. And we have an out-of-control whistle, which is the old-school thunder blaster. So if the dog is running wild, and the judges have told you, get your dog back, then you'll blow your thunder blaster to make the dog sit immediately and then recall them in.
Is that a completely separate whistle that you're carrying on your lanyard?
Yeah, like a silver, like a school football referee's whistle.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's the you're a bad dog whistle.
Yeah, you're a bad dog and you're coming in and going on the lead.
That's like when they hear that whistle, they're like, oh, shit. Yeah, that wasn't good.
That wasn't good. The walk of shame. Walk of shame's coming, usually.
I like that. So hunting and the field trials, they really are a quiet besides the whistle, because you're not yelling, you're not hacking. It's a quiet, So it's different, because you've been, did you stay for the horseback field trials here?
Peter on the horseback trials. I went on the walking. Remember I came out for NABDA and we did the walking field trial as well.
Yes, that's right. Oh. Okay. Yeah. So in our field trials, there's typically what we would say, we sing to the dogs because they're out ranging so far.
Yeah.
You sing and you let them know where you are so that they stay on track and stay in front.
Yeah.
So
everything's silent for us. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it could be a small bit of ground that you're working, so all the gallery are quiet as possible. The judges are quiet, the guns are quiet, everything with the dog, so that the dog has got 100% chance of finding that wild bird. And that's that's the chance, you know, because they are wild. And as we said earlier, pheasants, when it gets to January, they run. They are not stupid. They don't want to lift into the air because they know they're going to get shot. Mm-hmm. So they run. And so the quieter you can be, the better chance of the dog catching up with the bird and the dog achieving the whole part of the field trial, the HPR test.
Okay. So the characteristics that you see with Tetley, because he's, even though he's a full-on dog, he's a reliable, quiet dog.
Very quiet. Mm. And that can be to do with food. I found this really interesting, and we've discussed food in many ways. But yeah, for him, he's quiet. He's honest. He's got that lovely super high head carriage when he's on point, and he locates his birds at a good distance away. But it's no pressure on a sitting bird at all. And I can then control him by just pipping him in, and so that the birds are not spooked in any way. It's just the dog putting them up, so I've got a greater chance of achieving everything with him. Mm-hmm. He's very steady for a dog that's got such high drive. He's so steady, and a beautiful soft mouth. You know, I've never had to question a bird from him at all. From the age of 6 months old, he was retrieving pigeons to hand. A natural retriever really is. And that's something in our breed that we don't see a lot of, the natural retrieving aspect doesn't seem to be there. It seems that all hunting, all pointing, but the retrieving is something you've got to really train for, which I've never had to train for with Tetley, other than teaching him blinds, how to go out on a blind mark for birds. But temperament-wise, second to none. Loves everybody, loves everything. He mixes with females and males, and for that, just an amazing dog, really.
Mm-hmm. What are your future plans with him now that he has his field trial champion?
Yeah, well, hopefully we're going to try and pop him in the show ring for a few awards if we can. And try and make him up to that dual title.
Like his mother.
like his mother, yeah. Yeah, following his mum's footsteps. and also I'm planning to go to run some FCI trials over in Ireland. And let's see if we can get another field trial award on him somewhere else.
That's fantastic. So that will be a completely separate title then, because it's in a different system.
Yes, because it's in the FCI system, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So how would that differ? And I'm going to have to do an episode with somebody from over there to give me real specifics, because we don't need to get into that. But are you going to have to train him any differently than what you have already?
No.
Okay.
It ran exactly the same. Mm-hmm. It's just the actual awards are different. So they grade their awards and they give points for their awards. For all their trials. And like ours, they can withhold awards and they can have nobody in the awards at all. So it's quite tough. It's not an easy thing to get an Irish field trial champion, but yeah.
Okay.
We're going to have a go. it's something different to do. And he's only four at the end of the day. So as much as he's my hunting companion, it's also nice to be able to keep trialing at a young age.
Right.
Most dogs in UK don't make field trial a champion until they're 7 or 8. And the last one that was made up a couple of years ago was 10 years old. So,
wow.
Yeah, so he's done well at just being four and made up, really.
Mm-hmm. Can you go on further in field trials with him in the UK now? Like, what more would that do for you?
I could enter more field trials, but it doesn't do anything for me. It doesn't give me any more status than what I already have. I'll run them in the HPR Championships, which is only dogs that qualify for that have had a first or a second in an open trial. And due to COVID, there's not many this year. I think at the moment, I think there's about seven dogs at the championships, because you only qualify for 2 years. And then you've got to re-qualify.
How many of those are there in a year?
Just one.
Oh, so you have, okay. So it's like our invitational then. You qualify.
You qualify. Okay. Once you've qualified, you have two you can run in. So you would run in maybe the year you qualify and the year after. And then you must re-qualify if you want to run. Oh, you need want to run in it again. So, yes, we'll be running this year.
Peter, when is that?
It's in November, 9th, 10th of November.
Okay.
And depending on how many dogs, depending whether it's over a two-day period or a one-day period. Normally it's 2 days. It's a two-day state. And there's usually anything up to 30 dogs running.
Wow. And you said Peter will be running in that one too?
Yes, because he's just qualified with his young, 7-year-old, half litter sister to Tetley. So she's from Indy's first litter, yeah.
Outstanding.
Yeah. So she's halfway to being a field trial champion now.
I think what's so impressive, I mean, you guys got locked over in Australia for 18 months because the borders closed, the travel shut down, and that you can get back and these dogs are just basically needed a bit of, what, a month, 2 months of a refresher before the...
Yeah, two months really we had before our first trials, and...
It's incredible.
Yeah, and I think 3 weeks on the grouse... And our friend Anne Johnson helping us out up there, getting us out on the grouse and being able to shoot over them, being able to sharpen everything up. Yeah, did us proud, really. And the dogs did us proud. So, I find it really strange that dogs have picked up where we left off, really, from when we left. Quite surprised.
Right.
I really thought that we would have a lot more work to do than what we've had. We really have.
What will look different at the championships? Is it going to be same thing? What changes there?
Nothing changes. Just the amount of dogs, and it's usually run over 2 days, and the different quarries. So it can be grouse, partridge, or pheasant. So they can be all. And snipe, I think snipe are still in then. We can have an array of quarry on the championships. It doesn't need to just be on one species. So, like now at the moment, we're on to partridge now, but in August we were just on grouse only.
When you say partridge, what like we have Hungarian partridge, we have the Chukar partridge, which species?
So we have French partridge and we have English partridge, which are grey partridge, which are a lovely little bird, and they are much nicer to shoot.
Okay, so that's our Hungarian. So grey, English, Hungarian partridge, same thing. Okay.
They sit rather than run. So they're really nice for the dogs to work up to, and they'll sit tight. The dogs can point them, flush them, and obviously, depending on the season, shot. But whereas your red legs, they tend to not hold for a dog. They tend to run. And the dogs must catch up with them to flush them, you know, and get them up in the air.
Okay.
So a little bit. Different ways of working your dog on different types.
Mm-hmm. And yes, you'll come across those species together in the same area?
They'll be put down, you see. So a keeper will have had maybe bought in some red legs.
Okay.
But the greys are natural. So they stay within an area. So But we've got greys on the farm that we've tried to regenerate here. But we've also got a little covey of red legs, which tend to push out the greys. So we're trying to get rid of the red legs this weekend. Anyway, that's bye.
The red-legged devil's got to go.
Yeah, basically. but we'll have partridge and pheasant on the same ground in general in UK. That tends to be the two main species that we'll have on any field trial.
Okay. Very, very interesting. So you guys, you will still be intermittently hunting and trialing throughout the next several months, though.
Yes.
And you're taking the dogs through both. Like when they're trialing, you're not like, I can't hunt them because they need to stay on par with training. You're doing both intermittently.
We do both. We don't have... So when we train, it's no different than being in a trial. So we expect the same standards. So we don't let our standards slip just because we are hunting for ourselves. Mm-hmm. So we keep it up at the field trial standard. And we expect all the dogs to stick on that level. I think when we usually go to Australia, they probably all have a sigh of relief and think, oh, my God, thank God they're gone. it's every day's an opportunity to train and every day's an opportunity to keep your standards high, I think. Mm-hmm. That's the way we look at it. We've all got issues that with dogs because they're not perfect. And I have a young dog that's not perfect, but we're getting there, you know. Mm-hmm. And she's the type that would make it as well. You know, she's the type that we'd probably make it all the way now that the penny's starting to drop, really. But we'll see. Might not have enough time to finish what I want to finish with her, but never mind.
So I want to talk a little bit more about you because we skipped over that at the beginning. I do it at the beginning. I want to know how you got into hunting and dogs in general. Did you grow up doing that?
I didn't, you know, and it's a shame, really. I'm from farming background, but not hunting background. And my mum and dad always had dash hounds. Hmm. And I've obviously got a dash hound now. And I've just, I do love a little annoying breed, but I do have a white hair.
A little slinky
dog. I never had a dog until I was quite senior in the army, because as you know, I was in the army for quite a few years, 23 years. Mm-hmm. And before I left, I saw a picture of a German white hair pointer and thought, oh, I quite like one of those. And I went out, did a tiny bit of research, but not the type of research that I really should have done. Because you obviously, when you want a dog, you just go and get one.
Yes.
Yeah. Didn't really know much about the breed. Thought I would like to do a bit of showing and a little bit of hunting, but didn't know where I was going along with it. Anyway, went and did obedience training and different bits and pieces, which didn't really work with this dog. And I found out she was gun-shy by the time she was 14 months old. Mm. So hunting was a no-go. But she was a great pet. Not a great show dog. So I then moved on and purchased another young dog, young puppy, and amazingly she did all the things I asked for. I put a lot of time into her. She won a show gun dog working certificate at 18 months, probably the youngest in the breed ever to achieve such a thing. but sadly died at three with a heart condition, which mm-hmm. we know all about. But in the meantime, I got Bisto when she was just 6 months old. And Bisto was a a different kettle fish. hard-headed, beautiful-looking dog, beautiful puppy, stunning in movement, everything. And I wish I had him now as a puppy. Mm. But knowing what I know now and knowledge I know now that I didn't have then, and I didn't do him justice really as a young dog. I missed out on a lot of his training. I forgo all his hunting training for show awards, which was wrong looking back now. Although, yes, he's a show champion. Mm-hmm. I would have loved that to have been a field trial champion because mm-hmm. he had it all, as you know.
Absolutely.
And I just didn't have the knowledge and the experience to do that. And I think now with Peter's help, in handling a hard-running dog, yeah, I think now I'm ready for another Bisto. Mm-hmm. You know,
I mean, do you feel like Tetley's too far off of what Bisto is?
He's not off Bisto, but I would say he's more in tune with me.
Sure.
You know, he's slightly more biddable, I would say.
Cooperative?
Yeah, more cooperative. I don't have as many bad days with him. Mm-hmm. You know, like we can say we could go to, like Bill could go to a test with Bisto and he didn't know whether he was having the good Bisto or the bad Bisto day. Mm-hmm. I don't go to a trial thinking that with Tetley. I know I'm always going to have the good Tetley.
Wow.
But he runs with that drive of Bisto.
Sure. What a great combination.
Yeah.
It sounds a lot like Carmen because she's that way. She's full on, but very cooperative, very reliable.
Yeah.
You know, if you can't find her, that she's just standing point somewhere and
exactly.
you just need to go locate her because you know she's not pushing birds up and doing something naughty, that she's just standing there waiting for you to get to her bird.
Yeah, exactly. And I do that on a field trial, mm-hmm. you know, and some of the field trials we've been on, I've lost him. He's out of sight. I thought, oh, shit, he's gone. Peep. I only ever give one recall whistle. If I don't see him, I go looking.
Yeah.
And sure as fate, like you, like Carmen, on point, your hands up. He's over here. He's on birds. Get my guns over. And that's what is the difference for me, is that he will wait and he will stand off his birds and he's waiting for you to be a team to put those birds up and deliver everything to you. And I think that's it's a nice feeling.
Mm-hmm. You have semen frozen on him, right?
I do.
Thank God.
But you know, the hardest thing is because he had his hips smashed, at 12 months old, they will not score his hips in this country mm-hmm. Because of that, because sure. they're all out of shape.
Right.
So that does play a big part in a lot of people's mind, I guess, if they were wanting to use him at stud. Plus you've got to think, is it someone who can breed a good litter and pick the right owners for that litter, which might be hard going. Do you know, that's what you've always got to look at when you're breeding something. Are you getting the right people that's on your list that are going to actually be capable of handling quite a fast, hard going dog?
You're exactly right.
You know?
Yeah. It's a lot of dog to put into hands of people that don't have the experience and don't have the means to be able to exercise them.
Yeah.
And you guys have issues over there with, I mean, you don't have large amounts of public land like we do here. And
no, not to run dogs on, no.
Right.
And the problem is not everybody wants the wire here pointer at the moment in this country is, dare I say it, people are looking for the fluffy-headed, soft cuddle monster on the sofa.
Sure.
Which we know they can be.
Yeah.
But also the switch flicks mm-hmm. as soon as they get out the door and can become a monster.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, people don't understand that. What they're looking for is this really biddable, really friendly dog. And they're not all bred like that.
Mm-hmm. What I find the biggest disconnect is these dogs are extremely intelligent. I mean, would you say that Tetley is one of the most intelligent dogs that you've ever had or known?
I would say, yeah. I mean, they've all got their own different ways in my mm-hmm. eyes, but he's a clever dog. Yeah.
Right. But if you don't stimulate that dog mentally, and being a big difference between physically and mentally, that's where there's the struggle. That's where people have issues, because then they look for other outlets.
Yeah, without a doubt. And it's the same with the anxiety issues or separation anxiety, which I don't believe it is not bred. It is what we as humans do to our dogs that mm-hmm. creates it. You know, it's not bred in a dog to have separation anxiety. It doesn't happen. We breed it. We breed that. We're with them all the time. We treat them like children. And then people say, oh, well, they don't like being in the kennel. They don't like being in the crate. Or they don't. Well, the dog has got to get used to the way you live and the way you live your life. And we treat them like children. And I think that's, as humans, that's our downfall with dogs. And we are creating a lot of monsters.
Absolutely.
Sadly. But as are out in the kennel, they're all happy. You don't hear any barking. I'm right next to the kennel now and you can't hear them. So mm-hmm. they're obviously quite contented because I took them training just before I came on.
So when did you start hunting yourself? Because you're shooting now.
I am shooting now. Mm-hmm. About 3 years ago. I've always been able to rifle shoot, obviously, mm-hmm. but I didn't ever own a shotgun and I never really was interested. I was quite happy to run my dog. But now, realizing that I shoot, I think it's made me sharpen up on all my dog work so that I can shoot over my own dog. I want to be able to know that my dog is going to be steady so I can get a clear shot at a bird. And I think that makes me train harder on steadiness and good pointing, good distance that we can flush a bird. So I get a clear shot. I think it's really improved my handling mm-hmm. as a dog handler than it has anything else. It's really sharpened me up. And made me watch everything that bit more.
What was it that made you make that transition to stop just running your dog and enjoying that part of it, watching your dog hunt, to why did you decide to pick up a gun and start shooting?
I think probably Peter said something like, don't you think it would be nice to shoot over your own dog? And I thought, well, maybe it would be. And I just took it from there. I'm not the best shot in the world. Mm-hmm. I really could do with a better gun that's been made to me, but I'm managing my little 28 bore. still managed to put some birds on the deck, so I'm quite happy.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it does make a big difference. And I think it's made me read how birds fly a little bit better. You know, when birds fly up into wind and how they take off, and if the dog traps the bird between you as the gun and it, where will the bird fly to? So all those things help you as a handler to know where you should be positioning your guns on a trial and where you should be standing. And I think that's helped me a great deal.
Hmm. What's your favorite bird to eat?
Ah, well, I quite like pheasant.
Okay. How do you like to prepare them? What's your favorite?
Oh, well, we just debreast them and we put them in a crock pot with wild rice and chili and vegetables.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, we have them like that. But, yeah, I like grouse. Isn't too bad. But, yeah, you have to soak them in milk to make them nice and soft and then fry them up real quick.
With the red grouse you do?
Yeah, yeah, because they can be a bit tough.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very interesting. It's one of my bucket list things to come over and do a red grouse hunt with you guys. What were we supposed to do that? Was it 2 years ago?
2 years ago now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you never know. We might get out to visit you if our travel portal opens a bit better. We might get across to see you guys soon.
That'd be fantastic.
Yeah.
Was there anything else you can think of that you wanted to discuss or make mention of that
we didn't talk about? The all our dogs run without collars on trials.
That's right. You're right.
We don't wear any blaze or any name tag collars, so they run bare necked. We don't generally encourage the use of electric collars. It's sort of shunned upon here. Training's all done sort of the old-fashioned way by repetition. It's a bit slower to achieve what you want to in the dog. I don't know. I've done both. I've trained both, and I like aspects of both. I'm not that. I think there's a right place for e-collar training on a positive reinforcement type basis, as well as the constant repetition and how dogs learn. But I'm actually doing a bit of clicker training now, so I quite like the idea of teaching the dog to think about what it's doing and getting the praise for when it gets it right. So, yeah, a lot of different ways. But certainly within the field trial circuit, we don't wear orange blaze. We wear green dress, drab, blending with the scenery. And we have a red flag that denotes where the gallery is so the guns don't shoot us. But when I'm generally hunting with a dog on my own without a field trial, we do wear, the dog does wear an orange collar. Okay. So that you can really see it. Yeah.
Would you wear the same attire hunting as you do in trials?
Yes.
Okay.
The only thing I change is my colour of my hat. So I change. I do, yeah, it sounds crazy. But I change from I wear a pink hat training and I wear a light brown hat when I'm running a dog.
So what's the reason for that?
I don't know, I try and blend. I don't think in UK they would be very happy that on a field trial I wore a pink hat. They're not very, nothing we wear in field trials over here is very girly. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's like tweed, more traditional, right?
Yeah, more drab. Yeah.
Drab. More. Okay.
more colors. No bright colors. No. Yeah, there's no pinks. There's, well, I mean, you can get away with a pink shirt under a jumper or something. But in general, it's a white check shirt. Whether you wear a tie or a cravat, it's up to you. Girls don't have to wear a tie if they don't want to. Mm-hmm. And tweeds or a green waistcoat and green trousers.
What will you wear for boots?
I wear Mendo Dove XLs, which are 12 inch high.
What are they? What's the brand called?
Mendel. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I haven't heard of that one. Is that going to look similar to like what Dewberry would have?
No. Okay. It's more a lace up boot, more like, I'm trying to think what a good lace up boot would be. I'll send you a picture.
Yeah. Okay.
What they look like. But yeah, they're a long necked boot, 12 inch high, so, but laced. So fully laced all the way down through. But like a real proper hard walking boot, really.
Okay.
Just a bit taller. Yeah. Okay. So that's what I wear when I hunt.
For men, like Peter, for like the Scottish tradition, will he hunt and trial in a kilt?
He has, and he'll always hunt in a kilt in Scotland when he goes on grouse.
Okay.
And on a trial, he will wear a kilt if it's a special trial, but he didn't this year. He just wore his breeks.
Okay. So what a special trial, what would that call for the more traditional kilts? Like what would classify it as special?
I think if he was running Vindy and something again, he would probably wear his kilt just to, as honour to the dog, really. And I think his great grandmother was Scottish, so I think he does it as a family sort of tradition rather than anything else. It's more in himself, pride in himself, rather than as a respect. Not many people wear the kilt on the grouse moor.
Mm-hmm.
There's only a few.
In the championships, will he?
No, probably not, because it's not quite the ground to be wearing a kilt.
Okay.
Yeah. I think you need your legs covered.
Got it. Yeah. Well, I just find the tradition there so unique and special. It's
we did go out. He did wear the kilt when we were hunting, and we had a dinner, and we had a lovely evening dinner, and nearly all the boys had the kilts on when we went out for dinner. So that was lovely.
Thank you so much for joining me for this, Una. I know you have a lot going on right now, and so
yeah, we have too much going on.
So I appreciate it. It's always good to catch up, and hopefully one way or the other, whether you guys get here or we get over there, I hope it happens soon.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
I know Burke would love to. We miss you. I know Burke would love to hop around the kitchen like frogs with Peter again.
You know, and Blair, well, gosh, she's grown up so fast, and then we've missed so much of their growing up. It's scary.
It is. Real.
He's
goes fast.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I remember when we went to the Invitational with Burke. And he was just, he wasn't very old, was he? He was only a couple of months old. And we took him to that Invitational all that way in that long drive. And how good was he? And we passed him round everybody for cuddles at the table. Blossom.
We did. We had him packed away in several of our jackets with his little head popping out, if I remember right.
Gosh, and we had to buy so many extra clothes because it was so cold.
Do you remember that? We bought Walmart out of the little bit of winter clothes that they had in Iowa that year.
Yeah. And that fleecy blanket that we bought to wrap around Burke. It was, yeah. Oh, yeah. It was fun.
It was good. So that's the same location that we are going to this weekend.
Oh, okay, so that big water. That was quite a big water, wasn't it?
Yes, for that long blind retrieve.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. a big water.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well, good luck.
Yes. Well, thank you.
I'm sure he'll nail it. He's got a good handler and trainer. So, yeah,
it'll be a good time. So, well, thank you so much.
Welcome, and I'll see. Hopefully, see you soon.
You've just finished one of my favorite episodes with Una Russell. Wasn't it neat to hear the differences in how our pointing dogs hunt and test in the UK? Send me a message or email and let me know your thoughts on which type of hunting you'd prefer. Would you prefer to have your pointing dog get in and sit or flush? Or would you prefer your hunting dog get in and sit to the flush? Or do you prefer walking in to flush the bird yourself? What do you see are the advantages and disadvantages? If you ever get the opportunity to go over there to watch a field trial or hunt the grouse moors, absolutely do it. And while you're gearing up for this hunting season, be sure to check out the sponsors and partners of this podcast, Purina Pro Plan, Boss Shot Shells, Siren Shotguns, and Dakota 283 Kennels. And please support the conservations of the birds you're chasing after and the public lands in which you hunt.